Chapter 2. France, your father. But have a temper in the cart, flinging language and the hardest goods in stock at you, and where are you then? Put a name to your feelings. My dog knew as well, when she was on the turn as I did. Before she broke out, he would give a howl, and bolt. How he knew it, was a mystery to me, but the sure and certain knowledge of it would wake him up out of his soundest sleep, and he would give a howl, and bolt. At such times I wished I was him. The worst of it was, we had a daughter born to us, and I love children with all my heart. When she was in her fury she beat the child. This got to be so shocking, as the child got to be 4 or 5 years old, that I have many a time gone on with my whip over my shoulder, at the old horse's head, sobbing and crying worse than ever little Sophie did. For how could I prevent it? Such a thing is not to be tried with such a temper in a cart without coming to a fight. It's in the natural size and formation of a cart, to bring it to a fight. And then the poor child got worse terrified than before, as well as worse hurt generally, and her mother made complaints to the next people we lighted on, and the word went round, here's a wretch of a cheap jack, been a beating his wife. Little Sophie was such a brave child. She grew to be quite devoted to her poor father, though he could do so little to help her. She had a wonderful quantity of shining dark hair, all curling natural about her. It is quite astonishing to me now, that I didn't go tearing mad, when I used to see her run from her mother before the cart, and her mother catch her by this hair, and pull her down by it, and beat her. Such a brave child I said she was. Ah! With reason. Don't you mind next time, father dear, she would whisper to me, with her little face still flushed, and her bright eyes still wet, if I don't cry out, you may know I am not much hurt. And even if I do cry out, it will only be, to get mother to let go and leave off. What I have seen the little spirit bear for me without crying out. Yet in other respects her mother took great care of her. Her clothes were always clean and neat, and her mother was never tired of working at them. Such is the inconsistency in things. Our being down in the marsh country in unhealthy weather, I consider the cause of Sophie's taking bad low fever. But however she took it, once she got it, she turned away from her mother forevermore, and nothing would persuade her to be touched by her mother's hand. She would shiver and say, no, 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 when it was offered at, and would hide her face on my shoulder, and hold me tighter round the neck. The cheap jack business had been worse than ever I had known it, what with one thing, and what with another, and not least with railroads, which will cut it all to pieces, I expect, at last, and I was run dry of money. For which reason, one night at that period of little Sophie's being so bad, either we must have come to a deadlock for victuals and drink, or I must have pitched the cart as I did. I couldn't get the dear child to lie down or leave go of me, and indeed I hadn't the heart to try, so I stepped out on the footboard with her holding round my neck. They all set up a laugh when they see us, and one chuckle-headed Joskin that I hated for it, made the bidding, tuppence for her. Now, you country boobies, says I, feeling as if my heart was a heavy weight at the end of a broken sash line, I give you notice, that I am a-going, to charm the money out of your pockets, and to give you, so much more than your money's worth, that you'll only persuade yourselves to draw your Saturday night's wages ever again arterwards by the hopes of meeting me to lay em out with, which you never will, and why not? Because I've made my fortunes, by selling my goods on a large scale for 75%. Less than I give for em, and I am consequently to be elevated to the House of Peers next week, by the title of the Duke of Cheap and Marquis Jacalleral. Now let's know what you want tonight, and you shall have it. But first of all, shall I tell you, why I have got this little girl round my neck? You don't want to know? Then you shall. She belongs to the fairies. She's a fortune teller. She can tell me all about you in a whisper, and can put me up, to whether you're going to buy a lot or leave it. Now do you want a saw? No, she says you don't, because you're too clumsy to use one. else here's a saw which would be a lifelong blessing to a handy man, at 4 shillings, at 3 and 6, at 3, at 2 and 6, at 2, at 18 pence. But none of you shall have it at any price, on account of your well-known awkwardness, which would make it manslaughter. The same objection applies to this set of 3 planes which I won't let you have neither, so don't bid for 'em. Now I am a-going to ask her what you do want. Then I whispered, your head burns so, that I am afraid it hurts you bad, my pet, and she answered, without opening her heavy eyes, just a little, father. Oh, this little fortune teller says it's a memorandum book you want. Then why didn't you mention it? Here it is. Look at it. 200 superfine hot pressed wire wove pages, if you don't believe me. Count 'em ready ruled for your expenses, an everlastingly pointed pencil to put 'em down with, a double-bladed penknife to scratch 'em out with, a book of printed tables to calculate your income with, and a camp stool to sit down upon while you give your mind to it. Stop. And an umbrella to keep the moon off when you give your mind to it on a pitch-dark night. Now I won't ask you how much for the lot, but how little. How little are you thinking of? Don't be ashamed to mention it, because my fortune teller knows already. Then making believe to whisper, I kissed her, and she kissed me. Why, she says you are thinking of as little as 3 and 3 pence. I couldn't have believed it, even of you, unless she told me. 3 and 3 pence. And a set of printed tables, in the lot that'll calculate your income up to 40,000 a year. With an income of 40,000 a year, you grudge 3 and 6 pence. Well then, I'll tell you my opinion. I so despise the 3 pence, that I'd sooner take 3 shillings. There. For 3 shillings, 3 shillings, 3 shillings. Gone. Hand 'em over to the lucky man. As there had been no bid at all, everybody looked about and grinned at everybody, while I touched little Sophie's face, and asked her if she felt faint or giddy. Not very, father. It will soon be over. Then turning from the pretty patient eyes, which were open now, and seeing nothing but grins across my lighted grease pot, I went on again in my cheap jack style. Where's the butcher? My sorrowful eye had just caught sight of a fat young butcher on the outside of the crowd. She says the good luck is the butcher's. Where is he? Everybody handed on the blushing butcher to the front, and there was a roar, and the butcher felt himself obliged to put his hand in his pocket and take the lot. The party so picked out, in general, does feel obliged to take the lot good 4 times out of 6. Then we had another lot, the counterpart of that one, and sold at 6 pence cheaper, which is always very much enjoyed. Then we had the spectacles. It ain't a special profitable lot, but I put 'em on, and I see what the Chancellor of the Exchequer is going to take off the taxes, and I see what the sweetheart of the young woman in the shawl is doing at home, and I see what the bishops has got for dinner, and a deal more that seldom fails to fetch 'em up in their spirits, and the better their spirits, the better their bids. Then we had the ladies' lot, the teapot, tea caddy, glass sugar basin, half a dozen spoons, and caudal cup, and all the time I was making similar excuses, to give a look or two, and say a word or two to my poor child. It was while the second lady's lot was holding 'em enchained, that I felt her lift herself a little on my shoulder, to look across the dark street. What troubles you, darling? Nothing troubles me, father. I am not at all troubled. But don't I see a pretty churchyard over there? Yes, my dear. Kiss me twice, dear father, and lay me down to rest upon that churchyard grass so soft and green. I staggered back into the cart with her head dropped on my shoulder, and I says to her mother, quick, shut the door. Don't let those laughing people see. What's the matter? She cries. Oh, woman, woman, I tells her, you'll never catch my little Sophie by her hair again, for she has flown away from you. Maybe those were harder words than I meant 'em, but from that time forth my wife took to brooding, and would sit in the cart or walk beside it, hours at a stretch, with her arms crossed, and her eyes looking on the ground. When her furies took her, which was rather seldomer than before, they took her in a new way, and she banged herself about to that extent that I was forced to hold her. She got none the better for a little drink now and then, and through some years I used to wonder, as I plodded along at the old horse's head, whether there was many carts upon the road that held so much dreariness as mine, for all my being looked up to as the king of the cheap jacks. So sad our lives went on till one summer evening, when, as we were coming into Exeter, out of the farther west of England, we saw a woman beating a child in a cruel manner, who screamed, "Don't beat me! Oh, mother, mother, mother!" Then my wife stopped her ears, and ran away like a wild thing, and next day she was found in the river. Me and my dog were all the company left in the cart now. And the dog learned to give a short bark when they wouldn't bid, and to give another, and a nod of his head when I asked him, who said half a crown. "Are you the gentleman, sir, that offered half a crown?" He attained to an immense height of popularity, and I shall always believe taught himself entirely out of his own head, to growl at any person in the crowd that bid as low as sixpence. But he got to be well on in years, and one night when I was convulsing York with the spectacles, he took a convulsion on his own account upon the very footboard by me, and it finished him. Being naturally of a tender turn, I had dreadful lonely feelings on me arter this. I conquered him at selling times, having a reputation to keep, not to mention keeping myself, but they got me down in private, and rolled upon me. That's often the way with us public characters. See us on the footboard, and you'd give pretty well anything you possess to be us. See us off the footboard, and you'd add a trifle to be off your bargain. It was under those circumstances that I come acquainted with a giant. I might have been too high to fall into conversation with him, had it not been for my lonely feelings. For the general rule is, going round the country, to draw the line at dressing up. When a man can't trust his getting a living to his undisguised abilities, you consider him below your sort. And this giant, when on view, figured as a Roman. He was a languid young man, which I attribute to the distance betwixt his extremities. He had a little head and less in it, he had weak eyes and weak knees, and altogether you couldn't look at him without feeling that there was greatly too much of him both for his joints and his mind. But he was an amiable, though timid young man. His mother let him out, and spent the money, and we come acquainted, when he was walking to ease the horse betwixt two fairs. He was called Rinaldo di Velasco, his name being Picklison. This giant, otherwise Picklison, mentioned to me under the seal of confidence that, beyond his being a burden to himself, his life was made a burden to him by the cruelty of his master towards a stepdaughter who was deaf and dumb. Her mother was dead, and she had no living soul to take her part, and was used most hard. She traveled with his master's caravan, only because there was nowhere to leave her, and this giant, otherwise Picklison, did go so far as to believe that his master often tried to lose her. He was such a very languid young man that I don't know how long it didn't take him to get this story out, but it passed through his defective circulation to his top extremity in course of time. When I heard this account from the giant, otherwise Picklison, and likewise that the poor girl had beautiful long dark hair, and was often pulled down by it and beaten, I couldn't see the giant through what stood in my eyes. Having wiped him, I give him sixpence, for he was kept as short as he was long, and he laid it out in 2-3 pennorths of gin and water, which so brisked him up, that he sang the favorite comic of Shivery Shaky, Ain't It Cold, a popular effect which his master had tried every other means to get out of him as a Roman wholly in vain. His master's name was Mim, a worry horse man, and I knew him to speak to. I went to that fair as a mere civilian, leaving the cart outside the town, and I looked about the back of the vans while the performing was going on, and at last, sitting dozing against a muddy cart wheel, I come upon the poor girl who was deaf and dumb. At the first look I might almost have judged that she had escaped from the wild beast show, But at the second I thought better of her, and thought that, if she was more cared for, and more kindly used, she would be like my child. She was just the same age that my own daughter would have been, if her pretty head had not fell down upon my shoulder that unfortunate night. To cut it short, I spoke confidential to Mim, while he was beating the gong outside betwixt two lots of Picklesen's Publix, and I put it to him, "She lies heavy on your own hands. What'll you take for her?" Mim was a most ferocious swearer. Suppressing that part of his reply which was much the longest part, his reply was, "A pair of braces." "Now I'll tell you," says I, "what I may going to do with you. I may going to fetch you half a dozen pair of the primest braces in the cart, and then to take her away with me." Says Mim, again ferocious, "I'll believe it, when I've got the goods, and no sooner." I made all the haste I could, lest he should think twice of it, and the bargain was completed, which Picklesen he was thereby, so relieved in his mind, that he come out at his little back door, long ways like a serpent, and give us shivery shaky in a whisper among the wheels at parting. It was happy days for both of us, when Sophie and me began to travel in the cart. I at once give her the name of Sophie, to put her ever towards me in the attitude of my own daughter. We soon made out to begin to understand one another, through the goodness of the heavens, when she knowed that I meant true and kind by her. In a very little time she was wonderful fond of me. You have no idea what it is to have anybody wonderful fond of you, unless you have been got down and rolled upon by the lonely feelings that I have mentioned as having once got the better of me. You'd have laughed or the reverse it's according to your disposition, if you could have seen me trying to teach Sophie. At first I was helped you'd never guess by what milestones. I got some large alphabets in a box, all the letters separate on bits of bone, and saying we was going to Windsor, I give her those letters in that order, and then at every milestone I showed her those same letters in that same order again, and pointed towards the abode of royalty. Another time I give her cart, and then chalked the same upon the cart. Another time I give her Dr. Marigold, and hung a corresponding inscription outside my waistcoat. People that met us might stare a bit and laugh, but what did I care, if she caught the idea? She caught it after long patience and trouble, and then we did begin to get on swimmingly, I believe you. At first she was a little given to consider me the cart, and the cart the abode of royalty, but that soon wore off. We had our signs too, and they was hundreds in number. Sometimes she would sit looking at me, and considering hard how to communicate with me about something fresh, how to ask me what she wanted explained, and then she was, or I thought she was, "What does it signify?" So like my child with those ears added to her, that I half believed it was herself, trying to tell me where she had been to up in the skies, and what she had seen since that unhappy night when she flied away. She had a pretty face, and now that there was no one to drag at her bright dark hair, and it was all in order, there was a something touching in her looks that made the cart most peaceful and most quiet, though not at all melancholy. N. B. In the cheap jack patter, we generally sound it limonjoli, and it gets a laugh. The way she learned to understand any look of mine was truly surprising. When I sold of a night, she would sit in the cart unseen by them outside, and would give a eager look into my eyes when I looked in, and would hand me straight the precise article or articles I wanted. And then she would clap her hands, and laugh for joy. And as for me, seeing her so bright, and remembering what she was when I first lighted on her, starved and beaten and ragged, leaning asleep against the muddy cart wheel, it gave me such heart, that I gained a greater faith of reputation than ever, and I put Picklesen down, by the name of Mim's traveling giant otherwise Picklesen, for a fupunnit in my will. This happiness went on in the cart till she was 16 years old. By which time I began to feel not satisfied that I had done my whole Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.